wayfinders, and that's the way it has been taught for centuries, through apprenticeship, a day-to-day immersion, learning by doing. Austin Keno is an apprentice navigator with a voyage aboard the Hokulea behind him, and true to the master and apprentice tradition, he's passing his skills along to younger people. He's with us this morning. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Is there a quick and dirty way to learn this, or do you have to just really be an apprentice and spend some time?
Yeah, you just got to kind of like anything. That was really appropriate, you know, in a Hawaiian style, learning by doing, makahana ka ike. And I think that's pretty much the only approach to go about it.
It just wouldn't work if you simplified it or dumbed it down, would it?
Yeah, and you know, this school of navigation we're learning now and trying to condense in our, even from when I was in high school, but it's been really an art that individuals would spend their lifetime learning.
Yeah, and really what Mao passed along to Nainoa Thompson is essentially what's been now passed along to you, right?
Right, when Nainoa, who's my teacher, the president of the Polynesian Voyaging Society, went to Mao Pialuk, who's from Satawal, and asked him to teach navigation, he said, send me your children, which essentially meant you're too old to learn with enough time to all the skills you need to
He's
be a proficient navigator, yeah.
Was already too late in his life, huh?
Right, right. But the exceptional thing, which is a really good opportunity now, is Nainoa was able to take the tradition of Mao had and through traditional navigation, combine it with his background of math and science, so I was able to understand it with, you know, modern navigational techniques and compasses. And so now we can teach it and scale it to any math and science lesson in a classroom, or we can sit down at the beach with students and kind of a variety of options to continue to teach it. At least we have this ability to teach it and keep it flourishing throughout Hawaii and Polynesia.
So actually integrating contemporary math and science techniques actually enhances it, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the greatest goals of Polynesian Voyaging Society since it started in 1975 is to just not only prove traditional Polynesian voyaging was the correct theory that they skillfully navigated as opposed to the drift theory,
yeah.
But they wanted to make it so it's always survives in Hawaii. And now seeing little kids come to the canoe and say they've been learning it in school, or I'll attend a math class and they're telling me how they've broken down our star compass in one of their lessons, learning about angles. It's amazing to see how far we've come and how many different crossovers there are to learning something that would have just been taught on the beach with sand and stones previously.
And yet it sort of enhances the value of both kinds of learning, doesn't it? I mean, shows how compatible they are, but also that they feed into each other.
Yeah, it's been really cool too for the kids that, you know, like myself, who maybe struggled in a classroom, got confused by math. We'll take them out. I've had the ability to take some of those kids out on the canoe and seeing how their spatial awareness, and that's their strength on the boat. And the kids that maybe were really good at sail planning on the land are kind of, everyone's able to kind of find something that suits their strengths with this new style of teaching.
So were you, when you were a young kid, you were not the kind of kid who was naturally inclined toward math and science, huh?
No, actually, when we first started learning how to chart or map, you know, very classroom lessons, even in high school, I was kind of like the last one, quiet, didn't really say anything. And my strength has always been, once we got on the water, and I've grown up, you know, steering smaller canoes, six-man canoes, and the same difficulty that I might have had with a math problem, one of my classmates might have had understanding how to make small corrections on the water as to an oversteer. So it's just, we've all been able to kind of balance out one another in our group, and it's really strengthened this whole new next generation of apprentice navigators that I think are coming up.
Yeah, the problem with, I think, people's understanding of traditional modes of learning is that they think it's sort of less methodical, that it's kind of based on instinct rather than very serious method. And there's obviously a great deal of learning and method that went into Polynesian navigation, yeah?
Yeah, extremely. If there's one thing that, you know, especially with this worldwide voyage and taking the canoe to a global arena and a global audience outside of Polynesia, is to just, it's been amazing to remind people that Polynesians were scientists, that they were mathematicians of their day, that they were the astronauts of our ancestors. And that, yeah, although something, you know, you just see a guy looking, staring, maybe squinting his eyes out into the sunset, and you think it's all feel, I mean, there's a lot of science that's going on behind not only the colors and what he's noticing and what that's telling him about forecasting weather, but when he's looking at the variety of swell directions coming to the boat and when to make that decision, it's as calculated as you would to watch a weather report before undertaking on a you know, Trans-Pacific sail. So it's been a really, really amazing thing to see Polynesians represented now on a global stage, this worldwide voyage.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you have to train yourself to a whole new way of seeing in terms of looking at, as you say, looking at the direction of swells, things like that?
Yeah, a little bit. It's trial and error. It's time on the ocean, and we are by no means near where our teachers are, and our teachers will say that they are adolescents compared to where their teachers were as far as those who spent their lifetime. But you know, you start to build up confidence. So the first time we had to sail, when we couldn't see another island, we were just trying to find Nihoa. It's a northwestern Hawaiian island, mm-hmm. about a day sail away from Hawaii. And so that first time, you actually don't have an island to sight and reference, mm-hmm. and you kind of have to rely and give the steersman command just by looking at an open ocean swell without having like a backup.
Uh-huh.
It's scary and it's unnerving, and then you do that for a day and 2 days, and then you find your destination that you plotted on a map ahead of time, and the next time you get on the boat, the next voyage, you just have a little bit more confidence. You know, your feet are a little bit more calculated, because that's how navigators can feel the swell, as you know, they say they're always barefoot on the deck, and just be a little more attuned. But I think it's the more times you do it, yeah, learning by doing is pretty much the only way we've been able to succeed.
So you're actually with your bare feet on the deck, you feel the motion of the ocean, and that tells you?
Right, exactly. I mean, everyone asks, you know, if you don't, we can teach people, and you can learn how to use a fixed celestial object, the rising sun, a rising moon, a star at night, to find a bearing. But mm-hmm. when all those things disappear, all you have is the swell of the ocean, and when you can't see it, it's the feeling that it creates on the canoe. So the best example I can give is if, you know, you're sailing directly at a sun that's rising, and you know that direction is east in the morning. If the wave is coming right at you, you can feel what the hull is doing going over the wave. And then once you lose the sun, as long as you maintain that throughout the day, you can still relatively be holding the same bearing. But if all of a sudden you feel the boat violently rocking side to side, mm-hmm. you know that you've turned maybe like, say, like a 90-degree angle to that original direction. So that feeling of the wave under and what it causes the canoe to do is probably the hardest thing to recognize. And they said that Mao, who's the original teacher of us all, could be essentially in the hull without the ability of sight and sleeping, and feel when there was adjustments being made and when the crew had gone off course, just from the little sound of the water against the hull and the way that the canoe is moving. So we don't necessarily always navigate bare feet, especially when it's cold, but that's just kind of an expression to say that you're using really everything about you spatially to feel, instead of not just when you just can't see, you know.
It must have taught you a lot about just how to concentrate in general, because this doesn't sound like the kind of activity where your mind could wander.
Yeah, it has. And I think it's a really special opportunity to feel that mindset. And the thing I love about sailing is it puts me in that mental space of my ancestors. And if you had a hard time focusing before, once they put you on the deck and say that, look at your 15 crew members around you, and if you're the navigator, you're the father, you're responsible for getting them there safely, your concentration fills in, and your awareness, all of a sudden, you know, it's an amazing human experience to see the natural ability I think we all have inside of us.
Yeah.
But unless you kind of hone it and are forced sometimes to channel it, we never get to see it on land when we're shown how to go and find our way so easily through all the tools we have today.
Awesome. It's got to be a great experience for you. Thanks so much for coming.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Apprentice navigator Austin Kino will be the guest speaker at the Study Hall on Tuesday, September 6th at 6:30. It's a free event at the Modern Honolulu, part of the hotel's ongoing Study Hall lecture series.
Millie, seen the stars up in the sky. Looking up, they all make us high, but hopefully I'll